good, but good enough. Can the receivers elevate this offense in 2026? Will they be held back by the quarterback? And what does the tight end position look like? That's what we're talking about today as we continue our preseason preview series, focusing on the wide receiver and tight end position. Now, as you guys, if you've been watching this channel, we've already broke down quarterbacks. We broke down running backs as we go through. So make sure you go back and get caught up on those. A lot of good stuff in those episodes. But Michael, this is a position group, again, like the running backs that we talked about. You know, there's some questions on this Florida State team coming up this season, but just like the running backs, man, this is one that you feel like you can take to the bank, at least from a position of, you know what you got in Deuce. You right. feel good about some of the other pieces, but really, you know, we're going to talk a lot about what you got, but we're going to talk about some of the questions too, because you're going to need more than just Deuce this year. So we got a lot to break down. So looking forward to this one, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, this wide receiver core tight end room here, you don't know much about the TE room, but you do know what you got in Deuce, right? But it's those who are coming behind Deuce. What about Boggs? What about the other guys? Like, can they also step up so that you're not just focused on Deuce, so that the defense can actually spread the defense out and do different things with that? Also, what is the offense going to look like for these wide receivers? Last year, Jesse, we knew it was a deep route or it was a side route. That's pretty much it. Nothing really much in the middle. What is it going to look like now with Mike Norvell back calling the plays with these wide receivers? We'll be interested to see that as well.
Yeah, a lot of potential in this room, and we're going to break all that down. It's just, how's it going to translate on the field? You know what right. I mean? Because a lot of times, potential, everything has to work, right? That's right. an offense. Everything has to be in rhythm. Obviously, we'll get into this, but the offensive line has to hit to be able to give the quarterback time, to be able to take advantage of these receivers. But you feel good about what the potential of this room could be. And I think if you combine it with a good running game, there's a lot that it could do for this offense. So yes, sir. We're going to break all that down, as I mentioned. But before we jump into that, let me bring you a couple of quick show notes here. First and foremost is a word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, guys, the season is closing in. We are less than 2 months away. I actually have a package coming in Monday from Alumni Hall because I had to get me some new stuff for the upcoming season. And I hit up that flash sale they had the other day. So follow them on social media because they dropped those from time to time. It was a 25% sale. So I took advantage of that. But if you missed it, the good thing is you can save 10% every day on every purchase with code SPEAR. And if you're in Tallahassee, you can visit their in-store location at 1415 Timber Lane Road. Or, of course, you can make it easy. Shop online at alumnihall.com and have it shipped straight to your front door. So make sure you check those guys out and save 10% with code SPEAR. We appreciate you guys supporting them and for them sponsoring this episode. Another quick thing I wanted to mention is, guys, I have to once again tip my cap to you guys. We made it. We made it as a team. We really appreciate you guys. We passed 3,000 on YouTube. We've been asking you guys to kind of get behind us and push us over that mark as we've been chasing that for quite a while now, it feels like. And we did pass 3,000 after the last episode. So again, thank you guys so much for that. And now it's on the road to 4,000.
Oh man, let's go. Listen, everything we do is for the fans and it's by fans at Florida State. And so you guys subscribing and sharing and liking and commenting, man, that just helps us get more reach to other people. And so we just want to say thank you guys so much for being there. And let's keep going. Let's get the 4,000 and let's get PTS kind of being a national brand that everybody wants to be a part of, because this is for the fans. This is for you guys.
Definitely. And if you missed it in our last show, we do have an exciting announcement that I will be sharing later in the show. Some of you already know this, obviously, about our new community that we launched. I'll give you more details on that later. But the last thing here, guys, if you're going to be rocking with us here at Plant the Spear, why not go ahead and like and subscribe right now, rate and review on the podcast, hit that notification bell, because we got a lot of stuff coming up, man. We still got to break down the rest of the offense, the full defense. We got schedule previews, win-loss predictions coming up. And Michael, next week is one of the things I get excited about most for the year, and that is ACC kickoff event, ACC Media Days in Charlotte coming up next Wednesday through the Friday. Michael will be there. I'll be there. Yep. And so the next time you actually see a video recorded by PTS, it'll be us recording together. And as you know, if you follow us for a while, that doesn't happen a lot, being we live so far apart. But man, it's going to be a great time. I'm looking forward to it. We get to talk with the coaches and the players from around the league. So really looking forward to that. It's a fun event. It's kind of like the one thing they let us be credentialed for every year as a fan outlet. So big time there. But man, without further ado, let's jump into this receiver preview. And we're going to start kind of like we did with the running backs, talking about the difference in schemes and the things that set up the personnel talk. Then we'll go through the personnel talk, and then we'll get into some final thoughts at the end. Obviously, the big change for this year, as you guys know, Mike Norvell is back as the play caller. Gus Malzahn has retired. You know, Mike Norvell called plays for the first 4 years that he was here. Right. I feel like that was kind of a forced change last year. Right. Like, hey, we're not going to fire you, but we're going to take the keys from you from the car. So that is, you know, I don't know how the year off as a CEO head coach is going to do for him. He said he learned a lot of things from that. So we'll see how that plays out. The other thing that I think is relevant to mention is that Tim Harris Jr., who is the wide receiver coach, is now the de facto OC. He's not the play caller. It's kind of like an Alex Atkins situation. Right. But at the same time, man, I do feel like anytime you have a position coach in that kind of helper OC role, I think it does play a little bit of benefit for that position group, because he's going to know the strengths and the weaknesses of what you got and what they can do well and what they can't. Right. And so you can kind of help tailor the offense to the things that you know you do well. And in fairness, man, you know, I talked about how excited I was for Cam Martin last week at running backs coach. You know, I got to tip my cap to Tim Harris Jr. He had a pretty darn good receiving group last year, especially for, you know, having a little bit of an underwhelming quarterback. Right. I thought it's the kind of one of the best receiver, you know, outside of 23, I thought it was one of the better receiving groups that we've had in some time. So I want to tip my cap to him too. And of course, you know, we'll get into the personnel, but I thought the receiver group was, you know, with the limitations they had at quarterback, I thought it was a pretty good group.
Yeah. Listen, the lack of diversified receptions isn't on the receiving group. They were there. Right. They were ready. You could go back and look at this and say, you know, you put this on two people. I'd put it on Gus Malzahn, and I'd put it on Tommy Castellanos. Typically in a Gus Malzahn offense, he typically only feeds one wide receiver the bulk of the big catches, the big throws. Obviously that was Deuce last year. But then also Tommy just locked in on Deuce.
Yeah.
The other side of it was you had some injuries you had to deal with last year. Javion Boggs was out, you know, a lot of last year, you know, after the game. You know, Mekhi Dansby, obviously, if he wasn't one in reverse, they weren't really using him very much as well. And then you had the
Squirrel White was in hibernation. It's funny, you're naming receivers, and I'm like, I feel like we're missing somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
And that says something when the guy, you don't even remember he was on the team.
You don't even remember he was on the team. He was in hibernation. The curious case of Squirrel White, he had the big catch where he laid out against Alabama. You thought, oh, man, this is why we brought him in, all that speed. And then he did not make another catch for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Another catch.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So the outside of Squirrel White and outside of the injury to Boggs, the receiver room wasn't bad. It just wasn't utilized properly by the quarterback or the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and it was very top heavy, to your point, with Deuce Robinson, and rightfully so. I feed Deuce as much as I could. But, you know, again, you produced the first 1,000-yard receiver since Tamori and Terry in 2019, so that was good to see. But, yeah, when we get into a little bit more of kind of the things you were talking about with the scheme, you know, again, when you look at the concepts, the difference between Gus and Mike Norvell, like, I think the first thing that you do have to remember is these two are very, very similar offenses that are built from the same system. Like, I went through the last couple of days, because I take a ton of notes for these shows and comb through a lot of numbers and stuff like that, and I was trying to find a lot of differences in things, and it's just kind of hard, man. They both kind of attack the same areas of the field. You know, you have a little bit of, you know, Norvell has some more advanced passing concepts with a wider variety of route trees. He likes to spread it around a little bit more, to your point, where Gus Malzahn typically feeds that one feature receiver. Right. You know, Norvell does to a degree too, but I think that's from just having the best guy elevating themselves and the quarterback trusting that target. But when you look at the history, I went back and looked at the target distribution. You do see a little bit deeper spread of the targets among the top receivers, which is why today's conversation is so important, right? You can't just rely on one good guy. You need two to three guys in a Mike Norvell offense to step up to really make this effective. And to your point, you need some decoys out there to keep guys off from them just double team and deuce every single play. Because, you know, if I was a defensive coordinator last year, man, I'd be like, you still might not stop him, but I'm doubling deuce every play and daring you to throw it to somebody else.
That's right.
Now, I will say one of the things that I did notice, too, is he does like to use Mike Norvell, that is, to use the short to mid range a little bit more. But again, you know, these are two very similar systems. They are both run heavy. And I will say the one thing about Mike Norvell is, you know, being in that run heavy vein, which obviously comes from the Gus Malzahn system, as that's who he learned under. In 2022, they leaned heavily on the run because it was their strength. In 2023, the ground game wasn't quite as good, so they leaned heavily on the pass because they had a strong quarterback and good receivers. So, like, when you look at it, I mean, now I had to do some adjusting here because you have to kind of, when you look at 23, you got to do with Jordan Travis and without. In 22, they had the 14th ranked rush offense, but the 77th in 23. In 22, they had the 28th ranked pass offense, but with Jordan Travis, it would have been the 7th ranked pass offense. So the good thing about Mike Norvell is he does have the ability to adapt to what his strengths are on the roster. Now, as we get into the receiver preview, the important thing to mention is the way this year's roster is constructed, I do expect it to be more of a run-heavy team still, but the interesting part is there is skill on the outside. So the potential for a good pass game is there if the quarterback is enough to take advantage of it, because, you know, sometimes it might be like, you know, you think the difference between 22 and 23 in the receiver skill that you had and the offensive line skill, like you had a really good offensive line skill so you could run the ball. You had Johnny Wilson, but it was his first year being kind of good and you had not a whole lot outside of him, you know, Pokey and guys like that. But then when you had Keon and Jaheim Bell and all that in 23, you leaned on that, right? Yes, and you leaned on that. So this year, it's kind of an interesting – it's interesting because you kind of have a little bit of riches at both. You have good running backs. You have a good running quarterback. And you have skill on the outside. It's just, can he be good enough to do that? So, yeah, man, I think that you'll see more of a run-heavy offense still this year. But the potential for the pass game to be decent is still there if Ashton Daniels is good enough to take advantage of these skill positions.
And that's going to be the key, Jesse, as you said, with Ashton Daniels. Is he good enough to take advantage of the skill position? You know, is Mike going to put him in a situation in which, you know, he's able to make accurate passes, the downfield throws that when they do take their shots, they're in the most, you know, advantageous situation to make a completion on that, that he can get that deep ball percentage up, that the intermediate routes that you're going to see more in a Mike Norvell offense versus what you saw in a Gus Malzahn offense, which is probably one of the remarkable differences between Gus and Mike Norvell. You know, Gus, it's really a nine route, which is a deep ball route. Or it's a 15 yard in out route, which is like a run 15 yards, turn in or out. The ball should be there on your back shoulder, your in shoulder there, inside shoulder. Or it's something north or something east west. It's, you know, to the side there, which is basically an extension of the run game. Mike Norvell actually has different aspects to his route tree. He's got dig routes, he's got end routes, he's got corner routes, he's got post routes, right? He's got snags, he's got drags, he's got all those things that he actually incorporates inside of his route thing. So can he get Ashton to actually make those throws in the most advantageous way that will then set up those wide receivers to be able to capitalize on those opportunities?
Yeah, and you know, the thing about that is when I went back and watched that Auburn film last year, like Ashton Daniels, you know, I'm going to hold my breath if he tries to fit into a tight window. But like a lot of times when the receivers find space and he has time and he's not under pressure, he can hit those pretty well, like in that 15-ish, 10 to 15-ish yard range. So really, like what he did at Auburn was kind of what Mike Norvell really likes to do with his offense. So I think it can be successful. Now, to expand on what we talked about with Ashton Daniels being able to take advantage of these and what you have at the position, I want to look to – I'm going to expand on that a little bit. Now, you know, we referenced Phil Steele's preseason magazine a few times throughout the show, and so I wanted to go back and look at what he has in this year's magazine for the receiver group. And, man, right now, like, again, we keep saying, like, I think people are sleeping on some of the talent that Florida State has at the skill positions because, you know, obviously he can be wrong and this is a projection, but he has Florida State as the third best wide receiver unit in the ACC and sixth best in the country. Mm. Now, obviously that has a lot to do with Deuce Robinson because you have one of the best returning receivers in right. the country. But to me, man, when you look at that and you know you have that, the big question is, like, although we think we did in our quarterback preview that Ashton Daniels can be better than the preseason expectations, which in fairness, the preseason expectations are not super high. This is now, I think, the third quarterback tier list in the ACC I've seen put out so far this preseason, and he was not in the top 10 of any of them. So it's not super high, but we right. think he can potentially do better than that as a total package. But man, you know, he's got the receiver group, sixth best in the country. Ashton Daniels was not in the top 70 of his quarterback rankings. Wow. And you had like Delaware's quarterback in there. So to me, when we say that, like, how does that limit the receiver's ceiling? You know what I mean? Like, we talked about it in the quarterback preview. We're not projecting Ashton Daniels to throw for over 3,000 yards. Nope. So I don't think it's going to – that's the thing that I worry about, right? Given his career history, I'd be surprised if he threw for more than about 2,500 yards. You know, we said we'd like to throw – I think we both said 2,800 yards. But, like, I'm not sure that he's going to throw for more than 3,000. So how right. – you know, how much are you going to be able to do that, right? I mean, typically – we've talked about this before. A good quarterback can make average receivers look good more often than good receivers can make an average quarterback look good. And the example I have for you on that is think back to 2023 when Jordan Travis went against Pitt without his top two receivers. Keon did not play in that game. That's Johnny right. Wilson did not play in that game. Well, Jordan went out and had his highest passing yes, yardage total for the entire season with 360 yards. Basically, it was him and Ja'Kai Douglas that was just teaming up in that game. Now, you look at Tate Rodemaker, who started against Florida with a fully loaded arsenal. He had everybody. He had all those receivers, and he threw for 148 yards. So, now, I understand from an experience standpoint, that's a completely different conversation. But also, Pitt's pass defense was ranked 42nd that year, and Florida's was ranked 70th, and both games were on the road. So my point is, the receivers will help Ashton Daniels, right? Will he actually exceed those expectations? And can this talented receiver group make him look better than what maybe he actually is? Or will he be kind of, for my NASCAR fans out there, will he be kind of like a restrictor plate on a race car, right? Yeah. The potential to go really fast is there, but you have something bottlenecking that position. But to be fair with that, I think the way that I look at that is when you look back at Stanford, when his passing really struggled, a lot of that was because those receivers weren't talented. They couldn't get separation. But then you go to Auburn when he had Cam Coleman and he had a couple of the other guys that he had there. The guys that could get open, you saw his passing game improve a lot. Now, the last right. thing I will say, and I'll kick it back to you for some thoughts on that, is, of course, you do have to factor in the offensive line, right? How that's going to turn out, because we know we're replacing five starters. And as we mentioned in the quarterback preview, like, Ashton Daniels has been one of the most pressured quarterbacks throughout his career, which has led to some of his struggles. So, as we mentioned, the quarterback potentially limiting the receivers, the offensive line could limit everything, right? If you don't have a strong run game, if you don't have time in the pocket to make these decisions, it's going to limit everything. It's a ripple effect. Right. So assuming the offensive line turns out to be at least decent, top 20 in pass block efficiency they were last year, if you can be close to that, top 25, top 30, and you give Ashton Daniels time in a perfect world, I guess is what I'm saying, can he be good enough to take advantage of those skill positions? But can those skill positions being good elevate him as a quarterback? Because that's what we saw last year at Auburn, and that's what I'm hoping for this year.
Yeah, definitely. If those wide receivers can find themselves getting open more often than not, you know, beating their man off the punch there, making sure they're getting better leverage, then yeah, you're going to set him up to have a wide target so that he can make those throws and get it to them. The wide receiving group, at least on paper, obviously with Deuce and then you got Boggs and you got those other guys there, should give Ashton a chance to look better as a quarterback. I'm not going to say they're equal to the overall skill set that we saw at Auburn, but I mean Deuce is better than, you know, most of those guys that he had at Auburn. You know, if Boggs continues to come on from back from the injury, he could be just as good. We saw glimpses of that. We saw what Makai Dansey could do, you know, especially if you could use him and not just, you know, reverses. But all, like you said, all that goes back is predicated on the offensive line preview, which is coming up soon. But we did talk about that and the running backs and a little bit in the quarterbacks as well, too. And you can go back and watch those two previews that we were already posted there. But yeah, if this offensive line is at the same level or even slightly better, then you're going to give Ashton a lot more chance to be able to find those receivers. They have to continue to do the job of getting open, making themselves available, winning their one-on-one battles when they have them, and dominating the guy across from them.
Yeah, it's just funny with this team this year, because everything you say, you could be like, I think it's clear outside, it's not raining, but it all depends on what the offensive line is going to look like. So you have to couch it with everything. You know, I actually was commenting on a YouTube video back and forth with a subscriber yesterday, matter of fact, and it's like, yeah, I even said, like, that's why we often say on the show that the offensive line is the most important position on the field, not quarterback, because without a good offensive line, none of that matters.
None matters, yeah.
And so, but again, I think it's more like, to your point, if they're at least decent enough to where it does fall on Ashton Daniels, right. It's not he's running for his life and stuff like that. Can he be the one to unlock these? So, with that being said, man, let's go ahead and talk about the personnel that we do have in this room. Some of the reasons we're excited, some of the question marks that we have for this year. But before we do that, I wanted to tell you guys again about the PTS community that we just launched. This is what I was hinting at in the opener of the show. We did a full first look and launch episode you can find on the channel with about 30 minutes or so of walking you through what it actually is. But look, guys, this is something new for the Plant the Spear community and the Florida State Seminoles fan base, right? Where we can all come under one roof, talk about everything Florida State, talk about college football in a nutshell, all that type of stuff, man. And it's a really cool product. Like, we put a lot of work into this thing. The user experience, the UI and UX is very, very nice. I love the way it turned out. It looks really good. We have a lot of features in there, from message boards with the content from PTS, like you're watching right now, that you already know and love. We have live group chats in there. We're going to have live game day chats. You have customizable user profiles, badges, all kinds of fun stuff for the community. We've already had a couple guys jump in. I think we've had a pretty good turnout the first day. We've been having some fun conversations in there. It's already been flowing, the sports talk. And it's only going to ramp up as the season gets closer, especially with media days and all that stuff coming up. So if you have not jumped on that yet, if this is the first time you're hearing about it, make sure you guys take advantage of that. You can get started for free with an absolutely 100% no strings attached free account. Or you can join the PTS Insiders and get a little bit more premium experience, no ads, some exclusive content. We're going to do some giveaways in there too. Got some of those planned for about the first month or so whenever we get the thing rolling. And you can also, the heart of that is helping support independent FSU coverage like ourselves. We are by the fans, for the fans, which means we don't have a corporate backing or anything like that. So if you guys could find it in your heart to support our mission here at Plant the Spear to become one of the major media outlets and still keep that fans perspective, you can do that starting at just $8 a month. We do have a PTS Gold membership for $16 a month if you're interested in that as well. My guy Spartanol71 already jumped on that, so we appreciate that. So make sure you check that out. Plantthespear.com. Hit the board. There's actually a thing on the homepage where you'll find it right away. Or you can go to boards.plantthespear.com and go directly to it. Get a look at what it looks like and join from there. So, man, again, Michael, we've been having some good conversations on there already. So make sure you guys jump on that.
Yeah. It's been fun. It's been fun to be able to get on with our PTS family and just chat it up, have a direct link to us and talk about sports, talk about Florida State, talk about favorite memories. There's some really good conversation that's going on there. We don't want you to miss it. And again, everything that we get from a monetary standpoint goes right back into the show, because this is a show built for the fans, by fans. We are legit fans. We love Florida State. We bleed garnet and gold, and we just want to create a great experience for you guys. So we'd love for you to join us in the PTS community.
Yeah, and thank you to those who have already signed up. We really greatly appreciate that. So let's get some more signups. Let's get this thing going. The more people that jump on it, the more fun it's going to be. All right, so let's jump into this personnel, man. And obviously, you got to start with Deuce Robinson. Right. I mean, this is the bookend of the cornerstone of this receiver group, really of this offense. I mean, this is the guy you're kind of building around here. Comes in as your defined wide receiver number one, is going to be in Charlotte at Media Days next week. So I'm excited to be able to talk to Deuce get some of his thoughts on the upcoming season. But man, 6'6", 230, 82-inch wingspan. Just a massive target for any quarterback down. Yep. Like, I feel like I could probably complete some passes to Deuce Robinson, right? Probably needs to be about 15 yards max, but son of Dominic Robinson, obviously a legacy. So it was nice to see him come back. I know he said some things last year about, like, it was just disappointment. He wanted to do better for the fans. So I'm sure there's obviously NIL incentive there too.
I'm sure it was.
It, either way, it doesn't matter. It's nice to have him back. And man, people forget, like, he is a former five-star, the nation's number one tight end prospect in the 2023 class before converting to wide receiver at USC. So, you know, not just a big target, a talented target. Mm-hmm. As well. And even at USC, man, in two seasons, he had 39 catches, 747 yards, and seven touchdowns in 23 games. So he didn't get a big workload, but he's produced every year that he's been in college. And then he comes to Florida State last year. Again, as we mentioned, the first 1,000-yard receiver since Tamorian Terry in 2019, racked up 56 catches for 1,081 yards and six touchdowns. You know, and again, man, remember, like, he only had two targets against Kent State. And he only had, because they were just resting him a little bit, and he only had three versus Pitt because he was injured. So he very well could have been a 1,200-yard receiver last year. Yeah. But, man, again, 19.3 yards per catch, second most in the ACC, ninth most nationally. So he's a big play receiver, led the ACC in yards per game at 90.1, which was also top 10 nationally, led the ACC and was 11th nationally in yards per route run. So, again, man, remember what we said about Kroma as well? Like, he was the number one running back in the country in yards per route run, which is a receiver efficiency stat. Right. So, like, right now, I mean, you got a guy who was the number one running back in yards per route run and the number one in the ACC from a receiver perspective. So you got some real weapons there as well. First team all ACC selection, Blitkinoff, semifinalist, and a team captain. So, man, I mean, all the awards you can imagine Deuce Robinson is going to be up for this year. Looking at last year, he had 500-yard games, and it wasn't just – I know the headliner was like 173 yards against East Texas A&M where he was just burning everybody up. But again, right? But again, like, he did have some towards the end of the season where he was putting it up on Power 5 defenses. So ended the season with six consecutive games of 60-plus yards. And he ranks seventh nationally among active FBS receivers in career receiving yards right now. So, man, I mean – again, this is one of the best receivers in the country, right? Turned down a shot at the NFL. I'm sure he could have went there. And, you know, when you turn on the film, man, like, he's obviously a big, strong receiver, which makes him hard to cover to begin with. But, man, like, one of the things I think with Deuce is he's not just a jump ball guy, right? He is a guy who he's really good at finding and adjusting the ball in the air. You know, the DB's obviously, like, being under a shade tree when you're 6 foot six, like, you can't see anything, but Deuce will find the ball. He'll turn around. He's really good at catching in tight windows. He's really good at using his hands to catch the ball. You know, they always teach receivers, catch with your hands, not your body. And not only, Michael, is he tough to bring down, he's sneaky fast too. Yes, like, I was watching, going back and watching some of his tape last night. Like, man, when he gets in space, he can run right past you. Obviously, the only knock I would say on Deuce's game was we did have some bobble issues last year that needed to be cleaned up. Obviously, the one everybody remembers in the Virginia game that probably turns that game in the opposite direction, which he owned to it. He's like, man, I got to make that catch. And that's what I love about Deuce, right? He is very humble guy, very, you know, acknowledges that he's got some things to work on. Only a 58.9% reception rate. But again, you know, you're limited a little bit by quarterback play, which you will be this year too. But overall, man, one of the top receivers in the country that's coming back this year. And it's really, really nice that he's going to be wearing garnet gold.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Deuce is obviously, he's a Florida State legacy. Obviously, his father, you know, had a really big fourth down catch in a Florida game back in, I want to say that 2001, I believe, with Chris Ricks, which led to the eventual PK Sam throw there as well, too. So obviously, we love the Robinson family. Came over from USC. Already established as wide receiver number one, an incredible, incredible year last year with a quarterback who many of us would say was not very good. And was able to rack up 1,000 yards, was able to have some big time catches with those six touchdowns. You know, obviously I remember the many big deep balls that he was able to win. Yes, he's not only a jump ball savant, but the boy is a jump ball savant. You can throw the ball up there, and you have more of a likely chance that he's going to win that battle one-on-one. The knock on him, as you have already mentioned, is the bobbles. That was one of the feedbacks he got from the NFL when he went through the whole draft process was, man, you've got to be able to secure those catches on the first catch more often than not. You know, obviously you go back to that Virginia game where he bobbled it 8 or 9 times. And just as a side note, you should not be able to use slow-mo to determine whether or not a catch happened. But anyway,
you can look at any play in slow-mo and
say it wasn't a catch. Like that was clearly a catch, whatever. Regardless of the fact, that was probably one of the tide-turning moments in that game as well, too. There are other parts of that game as well. And then the other side that I would say to you, Jesse, is he tends to, in some ways, disappear in really big games. Against Alabama, he only had 2 catches for 18 yards. The long of that game was 15 yards. In the Miami game, he had 6 catches for 87 yards, but there were several catches that he didn't make or like just wasn't competitive in some of that. In the Pitt game, where Florida State was up and down in that game, he only had 2 catches for 10 yards.
I think he missed at least the second half of that game.
He did get injured in that game. And so there are some of those games that you see, like in the NC State game, 4 catches for 74 yards. Florida game, 3 catches for 60 yards. Yes, he did have, you know, the finish the season with the streak of 60 plus yards in the last 6 games, but there are moments where he disappears when they need him the most. And so those are the 2 biggest things he can work on. Obviously, just being that clutch type of wide receiver that in any given moment, you know, you can go to Deuce and he's going to make you a play. I mean, you think about some of the best wide receivers in Florida State history. Obviously I go to the number one, Peter Ward. You could, in any given moment, if Chris Winkie I can't think of the quarterback before him was in trouble, right? They could go to Peter Warwick. They knew Peter Warwick was there somewhere and he was going to get them he was going to make a play for them. That's the kind of wide receiver Deuce has to become. And then the second thing is he's got to be able to secure those catches on the first catch. That as soon as that ball touches your hand, it's in your hands. It's got to be stick 'em. It's got to be gorilla glue, whatever you want to call it. He's got to secure that on the first catch. Outside of that, I think Mike Norvell is going to put him in the Keon Coleman-like role where he's going to be able to come across the middle. He's going to run dig routes. He's going to be making those spectacular catches there. That's the kind of season I envision for Deuce Robinson.
Yeah, and I have a couple comments on a little bit of his depth in just a second when we get to Mekhi Dansey. But, yeah, last year felt a lot of like throw it up and hope Deuce goes and gets it. But he actually worked the kind of mid-range a little bit better than I thought when I went back and looked at his numbers. But again, I got more on that in a second. But yeah, when you look at Deuce, man, he's a big play receiver, especially the yards per catch, because when you look at the ACC last year, he was 3rd in total receiving yards. But when you look at the leader, Malachi Toney, which was, I mean, really impressive for a freshman. But he also had 109 receptions in 4 extra games compared to Deuce at 56 and was really only about 100 yards ahead of where he was at. And then the kid that they got from Duke, the Barkay kid, like he had 1,106 yards, not much more than Deuce Robinson did, and he had 72 receptions. Right. So, like, a lot of it, when you see the workload that he actually got compared to what he produced, he's really, man, Deuce, you can't say enough good things about Deuce. Like you said, there's a couple little things he needs to clean up, but if he does that, it's almost like Johnny Wilson, right? He was just an impossible guy to cover. It's just whether he's going to catch it or not. Right, and so with Deuce, I think if you could see the bobbling issues and the catch rate go up a little bit, man, I think he has the potential to be probably the best wide receiver in the country, if not one totally of the agree. Best at least. So now the next guy we're going to talk about here is Mekhi Dansey, 6'1", 189. Remember, a Tallahassee native out of Florida High. You know, what's interesting too, this kind of slipped my mind here, but when you talk about Dansey, you know, I have said multiple times that last year he was a redshirt freshman. His redshirt year, he didn't play much at all, like 50 snaps tops, I think it was. And so last year, I think he was running a lot on just his physical ability as a track star. He was still learning to play the position. I didn't even realize, man, he came in as a running back, right? Yes. He was recruited out of high school as an athlete. So not only did you have – and the 2 things that you got to mention with him is, one – like, yes, he came in as a running back, but he also, being in track, he doesn't participate in spring very much, if at all. Right. So you're talking about a guy that has missed a spring, came in as a running back, missed spring again, and then was able to come in and be your second leading wide receiver, putting up 27 catches, 571 yards. Like, that's pretty impressive for a guy who's still learning the position, didn't do spring the last 2 years, and came in as a running back. So,
right.
You know, first off, shout out to Tim Harris Jr., who was the one that made the call to move him to wide receiver.
Right.
Again, so that's really good. You know, he was a blue chip recruit coming out of high school. And so that, to me, is obviously, you know, he's an ACC champion sprinter. So he's got the physical tools. But I think last year you were just really running on physical ability alone. So what I'm really hoping for this year is that you see a little bit more technical skill be developed in this game,
right,
to where he can be a better overall route runner, a better, more polished receiver who still has that physical ability to just run past you, right? I mean, obviously, right, we know he was weaponized on reverses and screens and go balls and things like that. But now you'd like to see him be able to be a little bit more well-rounded receiver. Now, he did lead the ACC in yards per catch as a freshman who was, again, basically just running on ability. He was top two in long scrimmage plays of 30, 40, and 50 yards. So he's just a big play producer. Now, he's not a sleeper anymore. Everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows the speed that he has.
Right.
But again, he should be more technically sound this year after getting over 500 snaps of experience last year. So, you know, like they say, man, there's no experience like game experience.
Right.
And for him to do what he did last year, again, you're talking about 571 yards, 21.5 yards per catch, 3 touchdowns. He also added 216 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns there too as a redshirt freshman with almost no experience. You can see him taking that sophomore jump. That's right. What I'm hoping for. He did have 4 drops, so you need to clean that type of stuff up.
Yep.
But, man, he did show some flashes of making some really nice catches. Like, I was watching some of his highlights last night, too, and that Kent State catch,
yes,
where he just split those defenders that were double-teaming him and just made a circus catch. Like, if you can get that on a more consistent basis, I think you're going to have some in Danzy. I mean, he had 300-yard games, including 2 against Pitt and Stanford, so power 4 defenses there. You know, like I said, man, I would like to see more consistency from him as well as being more polished. I mean, he basically did nothing against Clemson, Virginia Tech, and NC State. The other thing, too, is 370 of 571 yards came on deep shots over 20 yards.
Right.
So, you know, again, man, when we talk about the Mike Norvell offense and kind of being more of working that mid-range passing game, it would be nice to see him to be able to work those underneath routes a little bit better this year. Get the ball in space 8-10 yards down the field and then do work with it, right?
Right.
Because obviously I think last year was just being able to take advantage of running past people. So now you'd like to see him be able to get open underneath and then run past people after that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mekhi Danzy, like you want to be able to see him actually develop his other wide receiver skills instead of just, I can run really fast and you throw the ball really to me deep, or I can get a ball on a reverse and then I can take it to the house. I mean, he did that a couple times, obviously one against Alabama, and then one against East Texas A&M, and then one against also Kent State as well, too. I mean, 3 straight games where he took a reverse to the house. And those were his 3 rushing touchdowns for the season, which is crazy.
It's fun to watch, but once the cat's out of the bag, it's
exactly
not as effective anymore.
Well, and then you kept saying, like, oh, here comes a reverse. Everybody knew it was coming, and then he'd be stopped, you know, especially against Pitt. He tried one, and he went for -8 yards. I mean, it was just
– yeah.
So yes, I totally
thanks,
agree.
Thanks, Cosmo's on.
Yeah, thank you, guys. If he can – Tim Harris Jr. and all those guys can actually develop him into more than just a gadget play receiver, and actually he can actually go across the middle, he can actually run some technical routes, I think he could be – I think his yak, which is yards after catch, could go up significantly. Because if he can go across the middle, make a catch, and break one, it's over. He's to the house. He's so fast like that. But, like, leveraging him in different ways, he could be a huge help in taking some of the pressure off of Deuce. Because if there's another wide receiver now that also has game-breaking speed that you don't want to get loose, well, now the defense can't just zero in on number 0, Deuce Robinson. They also have to look at Mekhi Danzy as well, because if you let him go, he's got game-breaking speed, and he can get to the house really quick.
Yeah, I mean, you can't cheat a safety up with him out wide, because if you do and he gets past that corner, it's over. You have to have safety help, which is great to have. I mean, because like to your point, it's kind of like that decoy off of Deuce, but you need him to be able to help Deuce out too. It can't just be like a distraction guy. You need him to be able, because there was so many times last year, man, that like Deuce would be a dang near puking on the sideline because he just, you couldn't take him off the field.
Exactly.
Because you just didn't have anything behind him. But, you know, when you look at these top two, I think those are the sure things that you feel really good about, right? Deuce is a well-rounded receiver. The thing I was hinting at earlier, his receptions were pretty evenly distributed from a depth standpoint. He actually had a lot of mid-range targets and catches and stuff like that. It wasn't just a deep ball. Danzy, on the other hand, was more of either a heavily short passing game where, like, they just get the ball in his hands out wide and let him create with that speed, or very heavily a long pass play where they let him use the speed to run past someone. The mid-range is what you got to see. You know, I'm not saying that type of receiver is not nice to have, because it definitely is, and it's very useful.
Right.
But, you know, to my point, like, Deuce got gassed a lot last year. You need someone to be – you need to be able to take Deuce off the field on occasion and have someone you can trust at that position, someone else to be able to work those intermediate routes, someone else to be enough threat to pull the defense off of Deuce at times. Now, again, this is where some of the tight ends could also come in to help. Desirio Ryles, who we'll get to in a minute, 75% of his production fell in that short to medium range, so that'll be good as to help as well there. But, you know, Michael, I think the big question, like, you feel good about those two, but the big question is who's going to be wide receiver number three, right? Obviously, LaWayne McCoy transferred out to Louisville to go be wide receiver three in Louisville. So, you know, but it is what it is, I guess. It would have been nice to still have him, but I like some of the guys that you have to fill that wide receiver three spot. Yeah. But it's just more of a question mark because none of them are proven. So when we get to that, you know, when you look at the read on this, there, you know, there's not a lot to talk about with these guys because there's not a lot to go off of. But you look at the Boggs, Carter, and Lopez, to me, is kind of that's Javon Boggs, Devin Carter legacy there as well, and Jason Lopez. You know, I think that's going to be your top three targets there that you're looking at. And I expect it to be more of a rotation than a competition.
Right.
I think all three of them are going to play. When you look at Javon, man, he looks like the favorite for this group, right? True freshman in 2025, 8 games, 4 starts. He actually was the first true freshman wide receiver to start FSU's opener since Tamarik Vanover 33 years ago. So it tells you what they think they got in him, right? 9 catches, 103 yards, and a touchdown, but he was very, very limited by injury.
Yep.
Looked like the game moved a little bit fast for him, but he was a 4-star coming in. His best game was against NC State, 4 receptions on 6 targets for 56 yards. And remember, man, he was the guy that all the players said was the one to watch last year.
Right.
Like everybody said Javon Boggs prepares like a pro. And so we had high expectations, and he just didn't really live up to him because he was limited by injury. But if he can live up to him this year, man, I think he's the favorite in the wide receiver three spot compared to the next two guys we're going to talk to.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Javon Boggs, I mean, everyone going into the season was saying, hey, this is a guy you need to watch out. This is a guy that was showing up in practice report. This is a guy that was being talked about in the media as somebody who could be a game changer, could be a game breaker. And then, you know, the season started and he kind of had a, you know, ho-hum. He had a big drop in the Alabama game. And then, obviously, he only had 1 catch for 3 yards against East Texas A&M. He had his best game to the date, which was against Kent State, which was 3 catches, 30 yards. Then he, you know, just kind of was injured. Obviously, he had 1 catch for 14 yards against Miami. And then, of course, like you said, the best game he had was 4 catches, 56 yards against NC State. So 4 games, 9 catches, 103 yards, 1 touchdown, you know, average 11.4 yards a game, like, or a catch, sorry. You want to see more. You want to see what would happen if he could get a full season in. Now, if he lives up to that, man, then now you have 3 legit wide receivers that you can go into the season. Oftentimes, Mike Norvell is going to run a 3 wide receiver set, you know, often bring on a 4th there, but mainly he runs out of 3 wide receiver sets there. So it'd be great to have Javon, you know, where you can intermingle him between the slot receiver or wide out position as well too. You can use him in different ways as well. He's also a good candidate for if Mike wants to keep the reverse in there. You know, he also has like a, he's kind of bulky in that sense at 204 pounds. So he's also could be one of those types of guys that can go make some of those dirty catches, but he's got to stay healthy this season to see if that can transpire.
Yeah, and I know you say you want to see him do better. I think you need to see him. You need that wide receiver three, man. You need somebody to step up. And he almost transferred out, so it was nice to have him come back. Now, the other two that we talked about that I think you're going to see play is obviously Devin Carter, son of former FSU great Dexter Carter. Four-star coming out of high school, 6'1", 175. Norvell has been enthusiastic about this kid in the spring, right? He said, Devin has come in with maturity, and I'm really pleased there. Then you look at Jason Lopez, another four-star receiver, 6', 182 pounds. Obviously, he's also a scholarship basketball player for Luke Laux, so he was limited in spring. But when he came in, he reportedly impressed almost immediately, right? I mean, when Mike Norvell's comments on Devin Carter and Jason Lopez together were Devin and Jason, they're going to play, right? They'd have to regress significantly from where they are now not to. And Florida State did not add a single wide receiver in this cycle. So that tells you the staff feels confident in the room they've built. So these are two guys that I'm looking at. Like I said, I expect that to be more of a rotation than necessarily a competition.
Right.
Now, when you flip over to the tight end room, this is where you got one new piece and one piece that you're hoping develops into a couple pieces that you're hoping to develop into something, right? Obviously, the one that they brought in was Desirio Rowles, a senior, 6'3", 235, East Carolina transfer, played in 37 games for 15 starts there. 2025 at ECU, he had 28 catches, 362 yards, two touchdowns. That was actually his best year there. And so Norvell praised him directly. Like, we thought coming in that he would be a guy that could really check a lot of the boxes. He did battle an injury in spring, but was back to full strength by mid-April. He did face two Power Four opponents last year, NC State and Pitt in the bowl. He had 6 receptions on 8 targets for 49 yards against NC State, but then did not record a stat versus Pitt. Only had, I think, 2 targets in that game. So, you know, you want to see him be more consistent against the Power Four competition, but, man, he's got that kind of Jaheim Bell type of body. And actually, it's funny, man. When I was doing my research on this kid, he's an incredible athlete. Like, in high school, dude, he had, like, 1 million yards passing, rushing, receiving, and over 100 tackles. So, like, he did it all in high school. But what I do like is he caught 65.2% of his targets. He had a 71% contested catch rate, which are both great. Now, he did have 4 drops on 43 targets, so that could improve. But again, he seems like a pretty sure-handed receiver that can work that middle route, that kind of mid-range routes, so it can help with your 2 deep threats.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they've been talking about him in that Jaheim Bell type slot. It'd be great because, man, if you go back to Jaheim Bell, he was supposed to be this incredible back. Obviously, we saw it with LSU, and then he got injured. Love to see what this kid can do if he stays healthy and how Mike Norvell uses a tight end way more than Gus Malzahn did, even though Gus was, you know, said he was going to, and they brought in, what's his name?
Randy Pittman.
Randy Pittman.
Pretty much the only tight end you used all year.
All year, and was really the only guy that was showing up in certain games. But, like, he didn't use him as much as he could. So I'm hoping that Mike Norvell gets back. He does love the tight end position and that he can use this guy in the Jaheim Bell-like way that we hope we thought we would have seen in 2023. I hope we get to see that in 2026.
And you'll get to see Randy Pittman in the second game of the season as he's at SMU now. So that'll be interesting as well. Now, the one I think the X factor in the tight end room that everyone's kind of hoping pops for you is Landon Thomas, right? This junior, 6'4", 240, actually did enter the portal as well and then reverse course and came back to Florida State. But, man, 2024, as a true freshman, like, he was one of the Devin Darling freshmen of the year, had 14 catches, 173 yards, 1 touchdown, started the final 7 games, and looked promising, right? He had his first touchdown against SMU, the team that's now making a couple of appearances on here. And you thought you really had something, right? Him and Amari Williams were some of the very few bright spots on that 24 team. And then 2025, the production just cratered, right? 3 catches, 35 yards, 2 touchdowns, despite playing in all 12 games. But he only recorded 114 snaps. He was banged up a lot last year. Right. As you mentioned, Gus doesn't really use the tight end a lot, and Randy Pittman was the featured tight end. So I do expect more usage this year, to your point, where Mike Norvell likes to use the tight end more often in this offense. But, man, I think from an X factor perspective, this is the guy that could, if he lives up to his recruiting hype, I think he could be a game-changing type of tight end for Florida State. It's just, will you get it? Because you saw flashes in 24 as a freshman. It just didn't work out last year. But if he can pop, man, this guy could be an X factor for this offense. People forget about, you know, he was a former 5-star at one point.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jesse, how I feel about Landon Thomas. He
was your boy back then.
Every year I keep saying, this guy's going to do it. He's finally going to break out. That's my boy. I was super excited when we got this recruit, when we won this recruitment. And every year he has seemed to disappear at some point, either not getting used or injury or whatever it may be. Obviously, we all remember the catch at the end of the half against Pitt for 25 yards. That was the only catch he made in that game. And then obviously he only had one more catch for the rest of the season. That was an 8-yarder against Clemson. Just, man, there's just so much potential in this kid. There's so much that he could be if he's leveraging the white ray and if he can stay healthy. I'm not going to put it on him this year. I'm gonna spare him this year of being my guy this year. But you know what? I'll be watching Landon Thomas. Hopefully you can prove all the haters wrong.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's one of those, like, if he pops, man, the talent that he has and the body type and everything, he could be a really big weapon in this offense. I think he just gets really overlooked because of last year and how the production dropped. The other one here to watch in the tight end room is Chase Lofton, redshirt freshman, four-star from Nebraska. He was actually listed as a wide receiver as a true freshman in 2025, despite being – he's obviously a tight end, was recruited as a tight end. But they'd said that, like, in the spring, he had worked a lot at the receiver position, even the slot, because – that just speaks to his versatility and his athleticism. I mean, they basically say he's like a 6'6 wide receiver who can also play tight end, kind of like Deuce Robinson, right? Yeah. He can be that kind of guy. And so, you know, he didn't get a lot of work last year, only played in two games, took a redshirt year, was banged up as well last year. Man, health is just going to be obviously a big thing with this team. But, you know, this is another guy that's a big athletic tight end who can almost work as a wide receiver, that if him and Landon Thomas can both pop. Like, I like the Desirio Riles kid, but these are the two that are the really talented guys with that big tight end kind of body that, man, if they pop, like, I think you got something there.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be interesting to see kind of like what they're able to develop into, and if you can leverage them in the right way, especially Lofton. He came in, obviously there was people kept saying this is the quintessential Mike Norvell tight end. We've yet to see that. So we'd like to see kind of how he uses that. If he does progress in that way, it gives you three good, decent tight ends that you could run. I mean, gosh, you could run a 31 personnel, which is becoming really popular. I mean, sorry, 13 personnel, which is becoming really popular in the NFL, obviously run by Sean McVay and the Los Angeles Rams. They run three tight end, one running back. So if we can see some of that start to develop into the Florida State's game, man, that's even going to make the run game even better. And then you have so many passing concept options off of that as well, too. So hopefully Chase can at least show a little bit of life that way going into 27, depending on who the coach is and all like that stuff and whether or not he's there, he get himself a viable chance to look at the starting position there.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, you don't expect a lot from him, but if you could get, you know, 200 yards out of him, 250 yards, like, that would be plenty to me. Right. I mean, he's got that body type like more drop.
Right.
Let's just hope he doesn't drop more as many drop. As more drop did. No offense to him. I hope he's doing well in life. But yeah, I mean, again, it would be nice to get something from this tight end position, right? Because it would change the offense. Now, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up and bring it home with some final thoughts here. I got some more notes that I find interesting. And one of those is, you know, as we always say, it's not illegal for teams to get better or worse from year to year, right? But the potential for not only a talented receiver room is also based on what the other team's pass defenses look like. In 2025 final numbers from a pass defense rank, look, SMU, your first ACC game of the season finished second to dead last year. They were 135th in passing defense. And their defensive coordinator is gone, who was a good defensive coordinator. I think actually one of their past game coordinators is now a co-DC. Yeah. don't know if I'd have done that at 135th. NC State, 132nd in pass defense. BC, 123rd. Clemson was 120th. New Mexico State, 103rd. Pitt, 100. Ranked 100th. And then, of course, you have Central Arkansas. So there was a lot of bad passing defenses on there. Now, as I mentioned, SMU, BC, and Pitt will all have new DCs this year. Clemson and NC State's DCs are returning for their second season. So they could get a little bit better. But, you know, I mean, what's that SMU defense going to look like? A bad passing defense under a new defensive coordinator. It creates opportunities for the pass game. Now, Bama and Louisville were both top 25. UVA was 33rd and Miami was 43rd. So when I look at these defenses, man, it's kind of like the good was good, the bad was really bad. And so if they keep that trend this year, that creates opportunities not only from the talents you have, but if these pass defenses aren't great, then, man, I mean, that's something you can kind of feed on this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're able to take advantage of that, right? If you're able to have an offensive line that can keep you upright, that you can make the throw, that you can win your one-on-one battles against these the passing defenses there, gives you a chance in every single game. All of that's going to be predicated on how Mike Norvell decides to use each of these wide receivers and how they determine to use Ashton Daniels in the passing game. And that's going to set the course, honestly. And we kind of can't know because we don't know how he plans to leverage Ashton in this passing game, whether or not he's going to be more conservative or whether or not he's going to be aggressive in that way.
Yeah, and just a couple of other, I mean, obviously you're going to have him run a lot with his legs, but you don't want to put games on his arm, but you need his arm to not hold you back in games, right? That's right. The big thing. Couple of quick final thoughts here is, look, man, Deuce is a proven guy, right? Just kind of wrapping up what we just talked about. Deuce is a proven guy. Having one of the top receivers in the country anchoring this group is big, but he can't be expected to do everything again this year. I think Danzy should take that step in year two with more experience and development. We just really need someone to step into that wide receiver role, even if it's by committee. I really don't care how it is, but knowing that Mike Norvell spreads the ball a little bit deeper into the rotation, you need that wide receiver. It cannot be a hole in this offense that you're just looking for someone to fill. You need, it'd be great if you had three guys that could step up and fill that position. In case you go four wideers, you got some guys that you can trust. You got some depth that you can spell guys with. To be fair, I don't expect a ton from the tight end position, but it would be a pleasant surprise if they did produce. Looking back at Mike Norvell's offense, in 2023, they put up around 750 yards combined. In 2022, with not a lot of talent at the tight end position, they put up around 500. So, man, if you could get 500 yards from the – I mean, again, we're talking about – we expect Ashton Daniels to throw for like 2,800 yards. If 500 of that could come from the tight end position, I think you're happy with that.
Right. Yeah.
But man, like the last thing that I really want to say is, you know, a lot of people rag on this roster and how bad it is and stuff like that. And I understand that, right? The roster in its entirety could be better. And that's a fair criticism of what they built going into 7 years into this tenure. But, man, I think people just miss the fact that there is some real talented pieces on this roster. Like, I went back and looked, man. Deuce, former five-star number one tight end in 2023. Danzy, four-star number 10 athlete in 2024. Boggs, four-star top 200 nationally in 2025. Devin Carter's a four-star. Jason Lopez is a four-star just outside the top 200. Landon Thomas, four-star just outside the top 100, who was a five-star. I made the graphic. You can steal the star, but I remember it being there. Chase Lofton, four-star, number two player in Nebraska. You know, we already talked about Chroma, who was a four-star and top five back nationally. Singleton was a four-star. So, like, there's a boatload of talent to work with at the skill position. So for everything people say about this roster, the skill positions are excluded from that. Right now, some of these guys are based on that potential, right? The blue chip prospects, you got to see them do it on the field. But man, from a talent perspective, because people love to crap on a three-star and like build up a four-star, look at what I just told you.
Right.
This is a primarily blue chip built skill position. You know, we're not the sisters of the poor here when it comes to talent at the skill positions. The problem is they don't have that same level in the trenches and they kind of cheaped out on quarterback. So again, it really comes back to how the O-line works and how, and letting Daniels be in the best position to take advantage of this receiver group and this tight end group with his arm. You know what I mean? Can't just be a runner. But if they have the run game that I expect them to, that should take a lot of pressure off this pass game and should create real opportunities for this receiver group. So, man, that's really my final thoughts. I'll throw it to you. We'll wrap this thing up and we'll get out of here. But, man, again, it hinges a lot on the quarterback and the O-line room, which has a lot to do with this. But there's some talent at the running back and receiving position. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There is talent at the receiver position. There's talent at the tight end position. It's there. It's, can we take advantage of that? Can Mike Norvell set up an offense that's going to roll to the strength of Ashton Daniels' arm, where he, you know, at least from what we understand, doesn't have the deep ball as great. Now, obviously he made some improvements on that in the spring, but can Mike Norvell leverage where he is really good at, and that 10 to 15 intermediate routes to the east and west routes, right? Can we get those guys in open field to make great catches and then get yards after the catch? That's where I think a lot we're going to see that at. Yes, we're going to take shots for sure. Mike Norvell's going to call shots, but where he's probably going to need his bread and butter to be is those intermediate routes. And can those wide receivers step up? Can we get more out of Danzy than just the reverses, right? Can Boggs stay healthy? Can the tight end room be leveraged in such a way that they be effective? Those are all the questions we're going into the season with. And if the high majority of those questions are yes, Jesse, I might even wager to say that we might be looking at one of the higher scoring offenses in the ACC this year.
Yeah, I mean, before Jordan got hurt in 23, they were averaging over 40 points a game. Like, right. Michael Phillips put together some good offense. It's just you can't have 2024 happen again, which regardless of what you'd have had at receiver, and they weren't good at receiver, regardless of what you'd have had there, the offensive line was so bad and the quarterback play was so bad, it wouldn't have mattered who you had at receiver. If it works out, you got the receiver talent. Right. You got all that stuff. You could – I mean, the defense to me is going to be the question this year, but I don't doubt it. If, to your point, now these are big ifs. But if these things hit, this could be a good offense. There's no way about it because they got, you know, they got some talent. But that's going to be it for the receiver and tight end preview, guys. Again, we appreciate you tuning in. Remember, we got offensive line. We got defense. We got all kinds of shows coming up for you guys. We got media days next week, which we'll be covering a lot of content on. So make sure you guys jump on with us now. Hit that like and subscribe button. Hit that notification bell so you never miss an episode. Rate and review on the podcast. And don't forget to join the PTS community. Connect with us on a deeper level. We'd love to have you guys in there. So check that out at our website, plantthespear.com. Make sure you get some new gear at Alumni Hall FSU and save 10% with Code Spear. So we appreciate you guys watching again. Thank you for helping us hit 3,000. We look forward to the road to 4,000. So again, guys, appreciate everything. Thanks for watching, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.